Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 2, Text Number 34. I hope.
Taya kritagyena vayam mahipate.
Katam vinasyama saritamena te.
Tatranuyanam tava vira parayo.
Susrushatinam dishayatra yasyasi.
Taya kritagyena vayam mahipate.
Katam vinasyama sarhitamena te.
Tatranuyanam tava vira parayo.
Shushrushatinam dishayatra yasyasi.
Taya kritagena vayam mahipate.
Katam vinasyama sarhitamena te.
Tatranuyanam tava vira parayo.
Shushrushatinam dishayatra yasyasi.
Shushatinam dishayatrayasyasi.
Ladies, please. Please repeat, Tvaya, you, Kritagena, a most grateful personality. Vayam, we, Mahipate, O King, Katam, how, Vina, without, Syama, shall exist, Surhittamena, the best of our friends. Te, of you. Tatra, there. Anuyanam, the following. Tava, of you. Vira, O hero. Pareyo, of the lotus feet. Shushatinam, of those engaging in the service. Disha, please order. Yatra, where. Yas yasi, you will go. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O King, O hero, you are a very grateful husband and the most sincere friend of all of us. How shall we exist without you? O hero, wherever you are going, please direct us there so that we may follow in your footsteps and engage again in your service. Let us go along with you. Purport. Formerly, a Kshatriya king was generally the husband of many wives, and after the death of the king, especially in the battlefield, all the queens would agree to accept Sahamarana, dying with the husband who was their life. When Pandu Maharaj, the father of the Pandavas, died, his two wives, namely the mother of Yudhishthira, Bhima, and Arjuna, and the mother of Nakula and Sahadev, were both ready to die in the fire with their husband. Later, after a compromise was arranged, Kunti stayed alive to care for the little children, and the other wife, Madri, was allowed to die with her husband. This system of Sahamarana continued in India even until the time of British rule, but later it was discouraged, since the attitude of wives gradually changed with the advancement of Kali Yuga. Thus, the system of Sahamarana has practically been abolished. Nevertheless, within the past 50 years, I have seen the wife of a medical practitioner voluntarily accept death immediately when her husband died. Both the husband and wife were taken in procession in the mourning cart. Such intense love of a chaste wife for her husband is a special case. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Litam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we hear, this is the wives of the king, what was his name? Sujana. Suyagya. Suyagya, says here. Lamenting, he was killed on the battlefield. And we see here in this verse, in purport, that there is the basic propensity of the living entity is to have love for someone. Srila Prabhupada describes in the Nectar of Devotion. You can't go out without loving. You cannot go without loving someone. And so Krishna consciousness means how to direct the loving propensity towards Krishna. And because we're working on it, we're gradually coming up to the stage of pure devotion by following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada. But until then, we have attachment for others, particularly the opposite sex. Being described here in this purport, there was a time when a wife of a qualified husband, who was like their very life, would give up her own life in his absence at his death. Of course, we couldn't expect much of that anymore. But it goes to show how there can be a very, very strong attachment. And if that attachment is utilized properly, then it can be a means of liberation. That's called the Grihastha Ashram. And if it's not understood, if it's not utilized properly, it can be a cause of degradation. Indeed, it's the very sum and substance of material existence when you boil it down. It's this punksa sriya maituni bhava metam, the attraction between male and female. And so, of course, I'd like to say something about that. I have to make a disclaimer, of course, because some might be thinking, well, what does a brahmachari know about these sort of things? Which is good. It's a fair enough protest. But in another sense, brahmacharis were always thinking about these sort of things. Because sex desire is something that we need to become smarter than. We need to become smarter than the urge and learn how to control it. So I just wanted to kind of point that out, that although there's some subjects we'll go over, of course, some of which are very obvious and almost all of which are very sensitive, I don't mean to upset or patronize any of the experienced, more senior devotees by saying things which might be obvious to them. But what should be obvious is that we're in this material world and we're battling with the urge, the attraction for the opposite. And that attraction, it exists everywhere. It doesn't matter that just because we put on saffron or just because we've got tilak on our head, that therefore it goes away. Rather, the devotees, they're fortunate because they have the facility to kind of see through all the smoke and mirrors, which is so often presented to us in Kali Yuga. We should take advantage of the facility there to see right through it. And Prabhupada always say that it's just like fire and butter. That simple. It's really not complicated. The only complication is that we find a hard time admitting that it's so simple. That it's just fire and butter. Woman is like fire, man is like butter. And the combination of the two generally causes one to melt. And that means that a woman doesn't have protection. So actually both parties lose. That analogy Prabhupada is giving means both parties lose. And so everyone needs protection. It's described in the Shastra that a woman is protected by her qualified husband. This always comes up that we like to say, oh yeah, a woman should be chaste to man, intelligently submissive. But that doesn't mean all men. It means her husband. You know, it's not that she's required to be submissive to every single man that's around. Because that's quite the opposite of being chaste, actually. That's the exact opposite. That's prostitution. So to be chaste to one man, that's called protection. And therefore it's an ashrama. That's what the word means, shelter. And in that way, a man can also be protected if he's developing the relationship in a Krishna conscious way. In that way, his reasonable amount of desire for reciprocation is satisfied, and he doesn't need to have the urge to be on the prowl, so to speak, and to offer his services to anyone and everyone. And so, it exists everywhere. I have to tell a story, of course, because this is a sensitive subject, and it wouldn't be right without me having to embarrass myself a little bit. But it exists everywhere. And even if we know very much about the urges, the attraction, it hardly makes a difference. Hardly makes any difference. To illustrate this, I'd like to make a confession, a confessional story. The one time I was in New Zealand, in Hamilton, and I was trying to get some things started at the university there, called the University of Waikato. Try to get some club going. We had a little restaurant, and we wanted to do more. So I thought I'd find out what all the kids are doing, what sort of clubs are going on. And I noticed that these Christian clubs are just packed. I thought, who goes to Christian clubs? I had to, you know, just check one out to kind of spy on them, see what they're doing, see how they kind of run it. And down under, they're really into these rock and roll churches, you know, the ones where they play the music and they got the drum kit and the lights flashing. And it's kind of like kirtan, but I don't know, I like kirtan better, to be honest. It's a bit more like rock and roll. And I went to one of these meetings. It was kind of like rock and roll church. It was on campus, though. They're in the auditorium. They had all the mics set up. And I walked into this place just by chance, really. And everyone was really dressed, you know, nicely, as if they're at a club. It was only like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but you know, everyone had like the high heels, and man had the nice V-neck shirts, you know, and everything was showing off, and like they're partying. And I walk into this place. And I'm just standing in the back, just kind of checking it out in the back. And of course, these people are very expert. They know how to get somebody. So like the very moment I walk in, my little, my slight brahmachari radar starts going, uh-oh, I've been detected. And, of course, some young lady comes up. Hey, bro, how's it going? You know, that sort of stuff. How you doing? What's up, bro? I said, oh, I'm just checking this out. I'm just looking. Don't mind me. Like, no, don't worry about it, bro. No worries, is what they say down under. No worries, bro. Everybody comes here, gets a chocolate bar. And I'm like, all right, I'll give it that. And then, she tries to talk to me. I say, don't worry about it. I'm just checking it out. And she walks away. And then only a moment later, the next one comes. Hey, bro, how's it going? First time here? I said, yeah, but I'm just looking. You know, I came here. I heard the music. I just came in to check it out. Don't worry about it. So that's cool, bro. Everybody, hey, just sign up on our guest list. I'm like, okay, whatever. I mean, I've been hanging out with religious communities enough to know that this is a very unorthodox and yet common way to get a young man interested in whatever you're doing. So I could see it happening. I wasn't, like, surprised. I said, all right, whatever. She goes away. Of course, another one comes. There's like four or five people in a row, you know. All these ladies, they had all their senses going. They came. They're being very, very friendly. I'm like, okay, I got to go. This is too much for me. Couldn't get into the music anyway. So I leave, and I'm walking away. And the first one, the first girl came up, literally chased me down the street, you know. Bro, bro, where are you going? Hey, what's up, bro? What's happening? Like, surprised that I'm leaving. Where are you going, bro? I said, I'm going home, you know. I just came to check out. I'm leaving. She's like, all right, bro, see you next week. I'm like, whatever. So I leave, and I go about my business, and I'm on the campus all the time, doing things at the restaurant and a few other things we had going on. And so I kept seeming to running into that same girl. Hey, bro, good to see you again. I'm always the bro. It was a very intimate relationship, but somehow I'm always the bro. Hey, bro, great to see you again. How you been, you know? I'm like, I'm all right. Excuse me. You know, several times this is happening. And then one time I was at a store. I bought some bell peppers. They call them capsicums there. But anyway, and I had to cross through the campus to get back to our ashram where we were staying. And I run into this girl again, and she's like, hey, bro, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just buying some capsicums. I'm going home now. She goes, capsicums, eh? Cool. And I'm like, yeah, I got to go. And then she looks at me straight in the eye, and she goes, bro, you are so awesome. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, she thinks I'm awesome. It worked. For a second there, I was thinking, oh, my God, she thinks I'm awesome. This is great. But then I have a little bit of intelligence. I caught myself, and I got really frustrated that I kind of fell into the trap. I said, you know, you don't even know me. Get out of my face. I got really upset and ran away. But just for the second, I realized that even if you know full and well what sort of potencies are in the opposite sex and the relations between them, even if you're aware of it, it makes very little difference. The reaction will take place. And Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita. Yatanta, what does it go? Indriyani pramatini haranti prasabhammana. He says that these senses are so strong, they're so impetuous. Impetuous means like you can tell them not to, but they're not going to do it. You know, like a child, hey, don't do this. It'll just do it anyway. They're so strong and they're so impetuous that they carry away the mind, even of someone who has discriminating intelligence, even someone who knows. You know, this is going to happen, and so I'll be all right. Even though you know. Haranti prasabhammanaha. It's like throwing the mind by force. Anyone's ever been, like, thrown before? Been in a fight? When someone's stronger than you, you know, you got nothing. So that's our condition, is that even if we know, even if we're well aware of it, still those senses act. And it can be bewildering. And so we have as a standard in the Krishna conscious community that there is a respectful amount of segregation amongst the sexes. And a lot of people find that difficult. A lot of people find that really old-fashioned, really bleak and uninspiring, and kind of takes the life out of things. But I guess what I wanted to argue in this point is that actually it's about respect. It's about respecting someone who's a devotee. It's about looking at the opposite sex and respecting their devotional service more so than their body and their mind. And if we're really on that level that we can perceive the devotional service rendered by others and respect that, appreciate it, then there's no need for a physical association. That sort of appreciation doesn't require proximity. It doesn't require it. And so in one sense, we can say that it's actually even deeper. It's actually even more intimate for there to be a respectful amount of distance and formality in those dealings rather than being habituated to just treating each other like bodies, which is not merciful. It's actually violent, according to the definition Srila Prabhupada gave in the Bhagavad Gita. Violence to keep reinforcing bodily identification in someone. And so the more that a man likes to volunteer himself to be someone's shelter, even though he's not, he's reinforcing that propensity in a woman to, how do you say, to kind of like, you know, use a man to get ahead, even in a so-called religious setting. Oftentimes, because of conditioning, they think this is how I do it. I have to kind of tailor to whoever's in charge. Unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, that's how women have to get ahead in the working world, in their studies, generally speaking, have to find some man who's in charge and, you know, please them in some way, satisfy them to get ahead. And that same conditioning can be here. And so it's not just a matter of being like, you know, crude, you know, or being really cold-hearted, that there's some respectful distance. It's really about an appreciation of devotional service. That's a spiritual skill, something I like to often bring up, because my Guru Maharaj would always emphasize it. It's a spiritual skill to be able to see the devotional service performed by others, to appreciate it, and in that way to look beyond just the bodily identification, or to see its relevant relative place. And so we need to pray to the Lord for that opportunity, rather than depending on our material experience, which is what we do as conditioned souls. I think, oh, I know how to handle a woman, I know how to handle a man, and we can cause all sorts of problems for ourselves in that way. Even if we know the philosophy, even if I know what standards are, the fire and the butter means there will be action. It will happen. And so therefore we have ashrama. That's what that means. There's four ashramas: brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. And Srila Prabhupada would often say they're all in relation to sex. That's what ashrama means. Ashrama means shelter from the influence of the illusory energy of the Lord. It doesn't just mean an apartment building. It doesn't just mean that I've got a house, four walls and a roof, and it's my ashrama. Ashrama means shelter, protection. And so it's important for us to, I mean, implicit in that understanding is that ashrama means shelter of devotees, that we have devotees around us who are experienced, who can see through our situation in a more sober and an objective way, and be able to give protection from the potential of entanglement. That's really what ashrama means. Otherwise, there's no use to just a bunch of people living together, you know, kind of despising each other because of familiarity. It means taking advantage of sangha, particularly the sangha of more experienced senior devotees, to see through all the smoke and mirrors. Because when it's happening, when we're like right in the middle of it, you know, you can't see clearly. You can't tell what's happening. Obviously, I'm speaking from experience. I don't want to tell too many stories. I told a little one, kind of a tepid one, so you all won't lose respect for me. But I've been through this a lot, unfortunately. And when those sort of passions are happening, you can't see clearly. You can't see objectively what your situation is and what to do about it. For a man, you know, his whole mind starts to like melt, you know, when she's around, that one, you know. And he can't like focus. It's always on his mind. And for a woman, it's a little bit different, but similar. The fantasies sort of blossom, you know, like blossoming fantasies. It'll be like this, and it'll be like that, and we'll all feel like this. And we can just lose ourselves, lose our intelligence. That's why Krishna says, Indriyani pramatini haranti prasabam manaha. It'll just throw your mind out of alignment, you know. So when we're in that situation, how can we see clearly what to do and what not to do? So ashrama means accepting guidance from devotees, accepting the protection of someone who's qualified. As we're hearing in the example of this verse in purport, for these women who had a very qualified husband, they felt like that was their real life. And without him, where's my shelter? So I might as well follow him. It's not an unreasonable, you know, it's a logical sort of statement. Without that shelter, you know, it's a dangerous position here. So I should follow him, even after death. So we need that shelter. And so it naturally follows suit that because, as we mentioned in that verse, because even if we know the circumstance, even if we know the potential of the attraction between male and female, it'll still act. Therefore, it only follows as a natural conclusion that men need to seek guidance from men and women need to seek guidance from women. When we talk about the shelter or an ashrama, it means just that. that although perhaps here we don't so much have, you know, the type of, or really, in fact, I'm going to say a pretty objective, constructive criticism, and in ISKCON it's often brought up that we don't have the same sort of facilities for women as often as there are for men in terms of ashrama and training and those sort of things. Still, it should be understood, and I don't mean to criticize anyone in particular, I think most of you would all agree, that that's really a responsibility of women to make arrangements for the training, the cultivation, and the protection of women who come to the Krishna consciousness community. Because if a man takes responsibility for it, as most of them are more than inclined to do so, the potential is always there, and it can be perpetuating the same problems. So generally speaking, the best arrangement is that there's that shelter, there's that ashrama, that if a woman doesn't have a qualified husband, that she needs the protection of other senior devotees. The same for men. And in this way, we can really make advancement in Krishna consciousness. If that's our goal, if that's our objective, then we can start to understand why it's important to have that segregation, why it's important to have that respectful distance, and still be motivated, and in fact appreciate it even more, appreciate the service rendered by other devotees, even if they're not devotees whom we're inclined to associate with in an intimate way. Without that, Prabhupada said so many times, that without that, if everything just becomes about sex, this movement won't go anywhere. The Krishna consciousness movement will stop moving. I recall reading in, I can't remember where, it was a lecture of that sort, or maybe it was even a room conversation when there were some issues about, you know, some senior devotees in senior positions having trouble. And it was emphasizing so much, if we're constantly bewildered by sex, things aren't going to happen. We're not going to be moving. We're not going to be motivated for the Lord's service. So if we really have as our objective to be motivated, to be excited about devotional service, then we should appreciate how there's a culture in place so that we don't become so easily distracted as we are prone to do, regardless of your lifestyle, regardless of the color of your garments. We're so prone to do that. I think I'd like to finish on that point, really. Again, as to make it an obvious disclaimer, I'm not trying to come up here from a position of having this all down very well. But I've experienced firsthand several times how it is really our protection to take guidance from senior devotees. I have, fortunately, my senior godbrothers around who sometimes point out to me how I can be doing better in these regards. And it's actually inspiring. And I hope that all the devotees, I think most of them know who I'm talking about, will really appreciate that opportunity to take seriously this principle of ashrama, this protection from the influence of lusty desire, and really make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Really be excited about advancement in Krishna consciousness. Because otherwise, it's just the same old thing over and over again. Puna punas charvita charvananam. It's not any different with devotees. It's really not that different. If we're just perceiving a devotee's body just like any other animal, it's really not that different. If there's a real relationship, grihastha life, then certainly it's something significant. But if our desire is just lust, just to enjoy, it's not like it's special that we've come and we've done it here. Doesn't make that much difference. And I think that's just really discouraging. You know, it's really discouraging. And this is why we have to be smarter than the sex desire. We have to really think about it and see through it. The Python man said to Prahlad Maharaj, an important verse I often meditate upon, says, Trapidam pitinam cha sukayanya panutaye karmani kurvatam drishtva nivrittosmi vipariyam. He says, in this material world, a man and a woman unite for the sensual pleasure of sex. It's like, it's practically everything. And yet, by practical observation and experience, he's saying, I've seen that none of them are happy doing it. If that's their only motivation, none of them are happy doing it. He said, therefore, just perceiving that objectively, I've stopped taking part in this sort of materialistic mentality. This is what the Python man said. And so what he's inviting us to do there is to think about it objectively. If we're right in the middle of it, how can we think of it objectively? We can't. Okay, so I hope I didn't offend too many people. I'll finish with that point, ask if there's any challenges or retorts or comments or corrections, particularly from some of our senior Varshidi Vaishnavas. Yes, Suraprabhu?
Just a point of story. About 20 some years ago, Sesha was here, Sesha Prabhu, and he had to leave because his father passed away of a heart attack or something. He was a general in the United States Army. So he went back to Washington, D.C. to see his father, and he came back to New Dwarka. And the next week, he had a devotees that were here remember, he had to go back again because his mother passed away. So I asked him, did your mother also have a heart problem? And he said, no, the doctor said it was a very common disease in the old days. She died of a broken heart because she couldn't live without her husband. She passed away 1 week after he passed away, and she had no symptoms. She didn't take her life. She just died in the Vedic way, naturally. I thought that was interesting.
Powerful. Okay, no other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanand.